Start. Starting with Parshas Ki Seitze. The Parshas starts off the following. Ki Seitze l'malchama l'ayvecha unisano Hashem l'kecha b'yadecha v'shevisei shevyo. When you go out to war against your enemies, Kadosh Baruch Hu will put them in your hands and you'll capture captives. And you'll capture captives. Now, here we go. The famous little Parsha Yerisa b'shevyo Yishevyo story, you're going to find in the among the captives a beautiful, beautiful young woman. The Choshakta Bal, you'll desire her. V'lakatach l'ayisha. So the Torah says you can take her for yourself as a wife. You just got to bring her into your house. You got to cut her hair. You got to take off her nails, right? You remove all of her clothing from her, but in a good way, not in a bad way. But take off the clothing that she's wearing that are very, very nice, and make her wear avelus type clothing. Put her basically in avelus for 30 days. Let her cry about them for 30 days. Then at the end, you can take her for a wife. And if you don't desire her, you don't have to take her for a wife. And that's what ends up happening. A very, very strange parsha. And yeah, the Torah says lo dibra Torah ela kenegid yitzhara. But the Gemara says lo dibra Torah ela kenegid. That the Torah is speaking just for the Yetzirah. It's trying to tell you what would be when it comes to your Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is going to want to do something, so you're allowed to go ahead and do it. Not only that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I give you a mitzvah to go ahead and do this. I'm giving you a mitzvah to go ahead and sleep with this Yifas Torah. A crazy, crazy mitzvah to go ahead and sleep with somebody that you might, that's not Jewish. That's not Jewish. David HaMelech actually did it. David HaMelech was together with the Ishes Yifas Torah, with Macha, and he had a child named Tamar, who was not Jewish. She converted, but the child was from an Ashes Yifas Torah in the middle of a war. It's a little crazy. Right? You have to make her convert afterward. But the Bia Rishona, according to the Rishona that hold, you can do a Bia Rishona, so according to the Tanoim, I should say, that Bia Rishona could be done in the war itself. And if there's a child born from that relationship, the child's not Jewish. But you're still allowed to do it. It's a crazy, crazy, crazy mitzvah. So here we go. It's all remez. It's all hint. It's a hint to something else entirely. Vade, there's a shot.
It's not during the war.
Oh, there's machlokas. That we had a machlokas about beforehand. It's a question of what it means. It says, the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, bring her into your house means you have to find a private spot in the midst of the war. You sleep with her then, and then you're not allowed to sleep with her a second time until everything's all over. That's how the Rabbeinu Bechaya puts it. But it does seem from the mashmos of the pasuk that you bring her back to your house. This is obvious diak over here. That if you bring her back to your house, it literally means go back home. You have to bring her literally back to your house, meaning at the end of the war, you have to go ahead. And it's really strange, because where's the Yetzirah? The Yetzirah should have been during the war itself. When you have all that adrenaline rushing through you, that's when it would be. So here we go. The remez is the following. So this is all from the Rabbeinu Bechai as well, but the Yaakov Veni quotes this down, the Miam Lois quotes this down. The Eishes Yifas Torah is your Yetzirah. Just like the Eishes Yifas Torah is a beautiful lady and everything like that, the Yetzirah dresses itself up in a way that makes it look like it's the most beautiful woman in the world. It makes you want to do something. It makes you want to do that Avera. So it's dressed up. It's got all these taivas that it wants you to do, that it wants you to go ahead and do. And this war, they were saying, Ki Seitzel L'Mochama, is not an outside war. It's an internal battle that you have every single day. Should I look or should I not look? Should I do this or should I not do this? Should I eat it without making a bracha or eat it without making a bracha? I thought I'd get some people on this right before they're telling. All right, anyway, should I go ahead and do this or not? All these things that we're talking about is all saying this war happens every single day while you're driving, while you're working, while you're thinking. Everything happens where the Yetzirah is trying to get a hold of you. That's Ki Seitzel L'Melchama Ol Oyvecha on your enemy who's supposed to be the Yetzirah and supposed to be the Satan and everything. That's what it means, Lo Dibra Torah L'Kenegad Yetzirah. That the Torah was only speaking about the Yetzirah. That the Torah was speaking about somebody who's trying to fight his Yetzirah. That's what it's supposed to mean over here. That's shot. So what happened over here? So he fell in. He fell into the taivas and everything. So what do you have to do now? If you slept with the Eishes Yifas Torah, you did something wrong, and you know you did something wrong, and you did something wrong with the Yetzirah and the Satan and everything. So what do you do? So here we go. It says, V'gilchas rosha v'asa siporneha. Tear off the hair and take off the nails. So the way the Rabbeinu Bechaya says it like this. The koach of the Satan is in your hair. Bad thoughts is what causes your hair to grow. I don't know how the beard grows. I'm not on that. I don't understand why the beard is any different from the hair. But hair is supposed to be something that's tummy. Oh, very good. Very good. Very good. Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was a Kohen. Rabbi Akiva was bald. He was supposed to be bald. And the shot behind somebody going bald was supposed to be somewhat of a kedusha thing. I have no idea. idea what that means. I don't know the differences between them. This is like heavy duty hardcore Kabbalah. This is really hardcore Kabbalah. So let's not talk about that. Whether or not you guys are more holy than me right now, I have
really
absolutely
good.
No
either
idea.
You're really good or you're really bad. Like there's something bad about something.
Really good. And it just falls out completely. It's like, all right, we can't take this anymore. But Gilchas Rosha is the idea of remove the Satan from your body. Remove that Satan off your head and get rid of him completely. Get him out of there. Now, Seir, by the way, is Esav. Esav is full of hair. He was born full of hair. That was full of Kochas Atuma. So you have to say to yourself, what you have to do by that is say, I'm ready to get rid of the Satan. If you say to yourself, listen, I want to get rid of the Yitzhahara, but the fact is, I still like doing these things. If you're not convinced that the best thing for you is to get rid of the Yitzhahara, you won't be able to get rid of the Yitzhahara. Because every time you try, they'll just be like, yeah, but I really want to do this anyway. You have to first remove your hair. Get rid of the Taivas. Get rid of those reasons that you have to do these Averas. Get rid of that first. Then after that, then you have to think to yourself, well, maybe I'm not going to be good enough. Think of the Milo of Adam Rishon before the Chet. What did Adam Rishon before the Chet, what did he have all around his body? Surrounded by nails. A nail. He was one huge nail. He had a nail covering over his entire skin. It was a nail all over. After he sinned, the skin came around and the nail was relegated to the very, very end of his body. The nails were all the way over there, but Adam Rishon was covered with nails. Covered with nails. So that's the Yisira Siponeo. You got to remember what it was like when we were full of Siponeim. Remember there was a point we were like, then we can get to that again. You have to bring yourself to a holy state where you can bring yourself to that idea of where you have a nail all over your body. Then after that, you'll be able to cut it down, it'll be a little bit more manageable. You'll sit down in your house, and everything, and you'll sit it down. You'll cry about all the sins that you've done, all the different things, the father dikka sins, the huge sins, and the smaller sins that are out there. And then afterward, you can come back to the Yitzhahara. The world needs the Yitzhahara. You got to know how to use the Yitzhahara for good. You can't just let the Yitzhahara rule and let yourself be ruled by your physicality and by all your taivas. You have to use your taivas, but you have to use them for good. As Chazal say, they wanted to take away the taiva for Arias. They wanted to take away the idea of people sleeping with other people. But then nobody was having kids. Nobody wanted to be together with their wives because they didn't want to have any kids. So Achar came, Tavoila, once you realize what you need the Yitzhahara for, and you realize that you're not just being fooled by the Yitzhahara into thinking, I need this, I need that, I need... You realize what you need because you removed yourself from those things, then you're going to be able to use it. You'll be able to be together with that Yitzhahara and be able to use it for the best things out there. And that's with Darchei HaTorah, you'll be able to figure those things out. Okay, that's number one. That's the first parsha in the first parsha. But let's get into Ben Soro Mora. We're skipping the second parsha for now. Kelly's Ben Soro Mora. By far, this is the strangest parsha in the Torah. To the point where the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Lo Haya Velo Yiyeh. There never was a Ben Soro Mora, and there never will be a Ben Soro Mora. A Ben Soro Mora is a guy who has to be between the ages of 13 and 13 and 3 months. He has to eat somewhat raw meat and wine that is barely biting. It has to be under 40 days.
Why is it in the Torah?
And he's got to argue with his mother and his father, and his mother and father have to want, both agree, to kill him in front of Beis Din at the age of 13. And the Torah says you're allowed to go ahead and kill him at the age of 13. No confessionals over here. But the Torah says you're allowed to kill him at the age of 13 because we know nothing's going to come from him. It's crazy. And then the Gemara goes through all these different stipulations that you need. The mother and father have to be the same height. They have to look alike. They have to sound alike. They have to talk together in front of Beis Din. And if anything is messed up, there's no Ben Soro Mora. They're crazy little halachos by Ben Soro Mora. So if Wolfson asks the obvious question, Wilson says, unbelievable question. He says, I don't get it. What's the point of mentioning Ben Soro Mora over here? Oh man, he's right up there. But there's another point that Reb Wolfson makes, which is awesome.
Is he the one who asked that question?
No, there are other people asking. Yes, Colson apparently. Yeah, there are other people as well. There are other people as well aside from Yissey, but there are very few. Very few. Just those two are the main ones. The beginning, it's a big question. The beginning of the parsha and the end of the parsha, very similar. When you go out to war against your enemies, anybody know what's at the end of Kiseitze? Very, very end. The parsha that we say, Amalek. You go out and fight against Amalek. Both of them, points out Reb Wolfson, are wars in which you leave your cities. When you go out to war, the Melchama is at the beginning, and then there's a Melchama at the very end where you have to go and kill Amalek. You have to go out there and kill Amalek. So Reb Wolfson points out, there's a war in the beginning of the parsha, a war in the end of the parsha, and it all deals with going out. Says Reb Wolfson, he says like this, when is Kiseitze red? Kiseitze is red
That was Steve Zimmerman, by the way.
Yeah, that was while I was talking, which is more impressive than you'd think. Okay, either way, Elul is different from Tishrei. Elul is different from Tishrei. Elul is a time where Kadosh Baruch Hu is Ki'ilu walking through the fields. And Tishrei is when he sits down on his throne. In Elul, he's checking out all those that are around the area where he's going to sit on his throne. All the people that are outside his immediate camp. Outside his immediate area. That's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going and checking things out there. This Parsha has a lot to do with those people that are outside the camp. Those people who are not in the camp, who are not the same, not the frumest of the frum. The people who are out there doing all their things, who are just not in there yet. They're not ready yet. Those are the Jews, mibachutz. And that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu is looking at right now during Elul. The Parsha ben Sora Amora, lo hayav lo yeh. Why? So says the Gemara, drush v'kabel schar. Darshan it out and get schar for it. Fine, but that doesn't explain why this. You could have picked anything. Tell me something about cups. Tell me something about tables. You didn't have to tell me about a ben sora moro. What's the point of the ben sora moro? What's the point of this entire parsha over here? And then the Gemara goes on and says, Rabbi Yonis, and says, there was a ben sora moro, and I sat down in his grave. I sat down on top of that ben sora moro's grave. I don't understand. Is it a machlokas whether somebody's a ben sora moro? And the Achronim say it's referring to Avshalom, Avshalom the son of Davidamel. But Avshalom wasn't a ben sora moro. He didn't die at the age of 13. What in the world does that mean he was Avshalom? How could you say that?
Killed,
right? Oh, no, but he said, I sat down in his grave. Seemingly, he got killed at the age of 13. I sat down in the Ben Sora Moro, who was killed at the age of 13. I sat down in his grave. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But it's just such a pella. What in the world is going on here? What do we want with this Parsha? And what's Rabbi Yonason arguing about? And we kill the guy because we don't think he's ever going to come back? Well, we honestly don't think. We honestly don't think that he's ever going to come back. We don't assume that a guy's going to do tshuva. I believe that the way somebody said it, I believe it was Rabbi Schachter when he said it a couple years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. I believe he said it as, there's always that guy that has in their yearbook, like, future, you know, future profession, axe murderer. There's always that one guy who's really, really strange and weird.
Yeah.
And eventually that guy ends up, they end up being something normal. They end up doing something that's somewhat normal. They end up going somewhere, which is, you know, which is less expected, but it's going to happen. People change. What in the world are we expecting over here? Okay. The pshat is exactly that. There's no such thing as a Jew that you can say about, there's no hope for him. That you can just say, I'm the Yayish from him, I give up hope, he's completely gone. There's no such thing as such a person. No such thing as such a person. No person can be so far out. I heard the question the first time, there's a reason why I ignored it. There's no such thing as a person that is so far out there in which there's no chance for him to be able to make it back. Will it be hard for him to make it back? Will he not have Siyata Deshmaya to make it back, which ends up out there? Okay. Is there those things? Yes, it's going to be hard. No, it's almost impossible. But is there a thing that a Jew cannot come back, that it's impossible for him to come back? Absolutely no way. The pshat is like this. Drush, the Kabbal Schar, is in the wording of Dir Shu Hashem Bihimatzo. Search out for Kadosh Baruch Hu when you can find him. The idea of Drush v'Kabbal Schar is there are people who are off. There are people that are off and they need help. There's no such thing as a Ben Sora Moro. The whole point of the Parsha is to tell you there's a Ben Sora Moro who should be killed at 13 because he's never going to come back. And we say about that, it's never going to happen. That it's never going to happen. Such a thing will never happen in our lives. We never imagine. That's what it means. There's no such thing as saying it's hopeless. That's the idea of what he's trying to say right here. And when Rabbi Yonason said, that I sat down in the guy's cavern and then I sat there, that he goes into a whole long, I mean, this is just half Leopella. He says, there are ways of sitting down on top of a kever and gaining the nitzutz of that person that died. The Ben Ish Chai. You know why he calls all his farim? Rabbi Yosef. His name is Rabbeinu Yosef. His name is Rabbeinu Yosef in Baghdad. Why in the world did he call his farim the Ben Ish Chai, Ben Ish Chayold, Achad Soil? All these different names that had to do with the Ben Ish Chai. He called Ben Yohu, Ben Yo, Ben Yo Yada, Ben Yo. All these names of his farim all have to do with Ben Yo, Ben Yo Yada, who's the Ben Ish Chai, the Rav. Everything has to do with him. Why? The Rav Pe'ilim. Why does it have to do with the Ben Ish Chai? Because the Ben Ish Chai, Rabbeinu Yosef, when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he stopped by the Ben Ish Chai. He stopped by Ben Yo Ben Yo Yada's kever. It's right outside of Sfas. Stopped by the kever. And he gained a nitzutz from Ben Yo Ben Yo Yada. While he was there at that kever, davening by that tzaddik, he gained a nitzutz from that tzaddik and became an even bigger tzaddik. An even greater tzaddik than he was. When he came back, people said to him, whoa, you're different. And he started calling himself the Beni, himself. People started calling him the Beni Shchai. They saw that he didn't need to tell him, a spark of him in him within, from the Beni Shchai, from that person, from the Beni Yod, Beni Yod, and that's what happened. Says Rav Wolfson, the pshat is that Rav Yonason said, I've seen people like that, a guy that was that bad, but he didn't give up, and he came back. And he worked hard on himself, and he brought himself back, and he became a Baal Midos and a Baal Torah. And I sat down on that guy's kever. I sat down in his kever, and I sat there, and I said, this guy improved on himself. This guy worked on himself. And Avshalom was like that. He was a Ben Sora Mora, but he worked on himself, got himself better, and then threw himself right back down. And that's the Pshat and Rav Yonason. He's not arguing. He's agreeing with the Tanakhama. There was a Ben Sora Mora, but Ben Sora Mora cannot exist. The idea of a person giving up and never having it ever again, that type of an idea cannot exist.
He would have been killed. So he might have done changed afterwards.
You're right. The whole point is that not that he did it at that age. It's that there was a Ben Sora Mora, a guy who would have fit that category. But he worked on himself. And he worked harder and harder and harder to make sure that he wasn't a Ben Sora Mora.
It's
already a
problem.
It's already a
problem.
It's a big problem. Yeah, he's not Chai Misa. He's not Chai Misa B'dei Shemayim. 100%. There's a lot of problems with the Ben Sora Mora. And the point is to tell you, there's no such thing as no hope.
Why don't the Torah tell us that way? Why don't you say you can always do the Teshuvah? It's a weird way to say
this is much more effective because people will ask about it and answer the question. Why do we do it in a Derech Shaila V'Teshuvah at the Seder? Because that way people start talking about it, start getting into it, and start realizing there's a question and an answer involved. Because just saying something doesn't always affect you. Just saying you can always do Teshuvah doesn't hit you. But hear about the Ben Sora Mora and you ask, what in the world? This can't happen. This can never be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're right. Make sure it never happens. Make sure you keep working on yourself because there is no such thing as Yesh. That's what ends up happening. It's to twist it around a little bit and to make it real. It's such an awesome board. There's more to it. Midrash Kli and everything, but let's go on. Chet does not only mean sin. Chet can also mean missing. In Divrei Hayamim, Chota means missing something. Missing something. So listen to this. Ready? Miss the target. Very good. That's exactly what it's talking about. That an arrow was missing the target in the Chota. Very, very good. Chet does not only mean that. Listen to this. I'm going to read it. Pashup Shai. If a guy is a sin that's worthy of death, but who mustn't he dies, the Taliso Solaitin, you hung him up on a tree. Lo Talin, if Asala aids, don't leave his corpse up on a tree. You're not allowed to leave a guy up on a tree. If he's hanging on a tree, you can't leave him there. You got to take him down by nightfall. Don't let him stay there.
Except
okay,
Haman, right?
Ready? Haman was up for a while, but that wasn't a Jewish thing. The Jews didn't put him up there. Yeah, well, that is what to talk about, actually, with that, with the Tumah. But regardless, that's actually a good question. Can also be translated the following way. And here's the remez. Listen to this remez. Awesome. So I got this originally from the time of Menhagim. I saw later on that it was a grah. But the grah is not, it's not to be found. It's in one of those Likute Sfarim, whatever it is. It says like this. If there isn't a man missing a reason for death. Now what is that referring to? It's the Gemara Bava Basra. Tez Zayinim and Aleph. The Gemara says there are four people who died without any sins. Four people who died below chet, without any sins at all. Who are they? Amram, the father of Moshe. Binyamin Atzadik. Binyamin, the son of Yaakov Avinu. Yishai, the father of David HaMelech. And Kilov, the son of David HaMelech. All four of them died without a chet. That's a Gemara Bava Basra. I believe Serach is mentioned in the Gemara in Derech Arizuta Parakal for the very end, who went to Gan Eden alive. But that has nothing to do with this. To do with that.
Isn't there a dude like in the first 10 generations who died without doing a sin? Like Enosh or Chanoch?
There's stuff behind Chanoch. Chanoch has nothing to do with sins though. Chanoch and Eliyahu was another story altogether. Chanoch and Eliyahu and Eliyahu are a different story. They're people who didn't sin but got a different thing. But the Gemara Bava Basra, does say, it says Binyamin Atzadik, it says Amram, it says Yishai and Kilov. Can you imagine being David HaMelech? Your father never sinned, your son never sinned. Okay, but either way, Yishai, Kilov, Amram, and Binyamin Atzadik. Kilov is known as Daniel in the Nevi'im. Either way, the Gemara talks about it in Daf Dalet and Brachos. So let's go. The Pshat is like this. So why'd they die? So the Gemara says, because Adam Rishon sinned with the Eitz Hadas. So when you sin with the Eitz Hadas, then you're going to end up dying automatically. You don't have a choice. You got it. Death was put into the world by Adam Rishon, and when death was put in the world, everybody has to die. So even though they never sinned, they still have to die because of the Eitz Hadas. You ready for this pasuk now? The Chiyeh Be'ish. Be'ish, this is my addition. The trop is Munach Revi'i. Lying down, four of them. Four people die. Who were the four people that died? The four people that died were Amram, Yishai, Kilov, and Binyamin. Missing a reason for death. If these guys have a thing that's missing the reason for death, the humas, and they die anyway, so why'd they die? The Salisa also all eights. You'll say it's because of the Eitz Hadas. It's all because of the Eitz Hadas. That's supposed to be the reason behind the entire pasuk. You gotta go ahead and reach around the pasuk. You ready for another one? It's also my addition. I know. Mishpat Moves. Mishpat Moves is the gematria of 875. It's a gematria of Kilov, Binyamin, Amram, Yishai. Exactly that. Binyamin without the Yud. Because Binyamin is written in the Torah without. Mishpat Moves. Ki yabi'ish chet Mishpat Moves. They died, even though they were missing the Mishpat Moves. The Mishpat Moves is exactly there. You should know, parentheses, the Minchas Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Pataya, the Talmud of the Ben Ishchai, says that there are two others that you have to add in here. Levi and Yoshua were also two people that died without a chet. But the Mikubolim say that, I don't know what that means exactly. We're going with the Gemara Baba Basra, and that's that. All these people, you should know, by the way, all these four people all did something in the Torah that seems to be a sin. For example, Amram married his aunt, and it was Machzor Grushasa. Binyamin HaTzadik has certain issues that he might have been over in not being Mocha on the brothers and not doing Macha on his brothers. Chazal say certain things about him. Yishai was supposed that there's issues with him, how he separated, was he together with his Shifcha, whatever it was. And Kilov was somebody who embarrassed a Rebbe Barabim. All these people have an issue, but yet it says they died without a sin. There's pelos by all of them, but regardless, that's not something we're going to go into right now. Rabbeinu Ephraim has another way to read this pasuk. You ready for it? There's seven ways that I saw how to read this pasuk over here. Rabbeinu Ephraim is going to be our second way, and I'm going to end with this, but listen to this. Rabbeinu Ephraim says, Ha'ish, Ha'ish, Hey Aleph Yud Shin is the gematria of Yeshu. So whenever it refers to Ish, it can be referenced back to Yeshu. You ready? V'chiyah be'ish, Chet Mishpat Moves. Now read it the same way. When there is a guy, when Yeshu has a sin, and Rabbeinu Ephraim says, Mishpat Moves, he gets two deaths. This guy should get two deaths altogether. What do you give him? Not only give him skila, but hang him up as well. Hang him up as well. And according to Chazal, the Yeshu that we killed, there is a Yeshu that we killed, whether it's Yashka or it's not Yashka, whether it's two, three, whatever it is, the Yeshu that we killed was a Talmud of Rabbi of Yoshua ben Prachya. That Yeshu was stoned and then hung. He was stoned and then hung. And that's the pshat that we're referring to over here. Now very quickly, ready? Be'ish chait Mishpat, Be'ish Chait Mishpat, is the gematria of 760, which is the gematria of Yeshu HaMechashev, Yashka, the magician. And that's why he was killed. There's also another gematria over here. You ready for it? Shor Chamor. Shor and Chamor, because there's a Shor of Tuma and a Chamor of Tuma. The Shor of Tuma is Esav, the Chamor of Tuma is Yishmael. If you want to understand what that means, wait until Rabbi Schechter speaks later on. We spoke about it a little bit earlier. Shor and Chamor of Tuma is unbelievable. No, it's not, it doesn't have, Yeshu is all about the Shor and Chamor of Tuma. Bringing together Yishmael and Esav. And that there's something in between that. But the Ish Chait Mishpah, I just wanted to put that inside. Okay, ready? This is what I want to say every year. I just can't say it. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to have the goal to say it this year. I'm going to get everything. I'm just going for it. Lo yeh kli gever al isha. A woman cannot wear men's clothing. Lo yeh bash gever simas isha. A man cannot wear woman's clothing. It's an abomination for anybody who does this. The pasuk pshat is clothing. Right? A man can't wear woman's clothes. Woman can't wear men's clothes. Whatever. Purim, don't ask. Okay, fine. New. That's that. Wow. Fine. How come Yonas ben Uziel says on the side, a woman may not wear tefillin and tzitzis. A woman may not wear tefillin and tzitzis. That's how he translates this pasuk. Now Yonas ben Uziel is a Tana, the Talmud of Hillel HaZaken. The Talmud of Hillel HaZaken is not a Stama person. If the Yonas ben Uziel is the one that Yonas ben Uziel wrote, fine. But regardless, the Targum Yonas ben Uziel says a woman cannot wear tzitzis and tefillin. What does that mean, Lo Yakli Gavar Alisha? Oh, I mean, is that Asur? Is it Asur? It's technically not Asur. They're just not mitzvah in it. They don't have the mitzvah. So what does it mean? It's Lo Yakli. This is a kium of going at. I've never seen anywhere the Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. I know everybody says it. I've never seen anywhere. I'd love to see that inside if anybody can see Rashi's daughters. Right, the book, the English book.
But
yeah.
Halachically, they're allowed to.
Halachically, they can. You are on some right. So let's try to understand the pasuk. You ready for the understanding of the pasuk? Here it goes, like this. The pshat is, it's not Asur. It's not Asur. However, the point in this life is to understand who you are and what you were given in this world and use your own kochos, not someone else's. The point of this world is not to look at somebody else and say, I gotta be like that guy. I wanna be like that guy. HaKadosh Baruch Yahu didn't make you that way. If he made you into a doctor, you're supposed to be a doctor. If he made you into a plumber, you're a plumber. There's nothing bad about being a plumber. There's nothing bad about being a doctor. Both of them are professions that are fitting that person. And if you have a certain profession that you feel you go into, then that's the profession you're supposed to go into. If you have a profession that you feel like, oh, I just want to be like that guy, because that guy's really successful in it, and I want to try it as well, you're probably going to fail. Because it's not the profession that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from you. You've got to find something that fits you, not what fits other people. If women are wearing tefillin and tzitzis, when they're not mitzuved to do so, they're missing out on the point of life. Can they do it? Of course they can. But the same way that women shouldn't wear men's clothing, it doesn't fit them. It doesn't look good on them. The point is for that to be men's clothing, not women's clothing. Men are supposed to go out to war because men have the strength to do so. Men don't have to worry about Nida. Men don't have to worry about having a child. Men don't have to worry about their emotions getting in the way. Men just go ahead and they fight and they do it. They go ahead and they kill. That's the idea of what a man does. A woman getting in there can mess it up because of any one of those reasons that are out there. It doesn't mean that a woman can't fight a war. They can. It's just not her job. It doesn't make any sense for her to do something which is not the easiest thing. Now, does it apply to every woman? It doesn't apply to everyone. Does it apply to every man? It doesn't apply to every man. There are girly men and there are manly women. We know that. But the idea is that that's what it means. Don't put on the clothing of a man. Don't wear tzitzit and tefillin, which is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you shouldn't need to wear. A woman doesn't need it, so they don't need it. If a woman doesn't need a kippah, don't wear a kippah. All of a sudden they go ahead and they do this. They just don't understand what they're all about. It's like a person trying to be something which they're not, and they have to understand that. That's what the pasuk is trying to say. Is it usur? It's not usur. Is it stupid? Are you losing out on your life? Are you missing out on your life? What?
Is it usur? You just said it's
yeah, yeah. The pasuk shot. Yeah, in the pasuk shot of the pasuk, it's Tov Avas Hashem Elokecha Kol Se'ila. In the drush, it's not. In Yonis Menuzil, it's not that it's an abomination. But even then, you could even say, by using your life for the wrong reason, you're abominating your life. You're making your whole life an abomination. You're showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't want what you gave me. I want to do something that I want to do my own.
Why does he need to tefillin
to make that shot? That's a good call altogether. I guess you have to say it's a mitzvah mangrama that people wear all the time. You know, something that a woman feels like, oh, if I'm missing out on that, I'm missing out on kedusha every day of my life. You're not. The kedusha is not necessary for you, or you already have that kedusha. You don't need the towels and tefillin in order to get it. That's the pshat behind that. And that's the pshat in the Yalkut Reuveni as well, by the way. Yalkut Reuveni says that, you know what this pasuk is for? It's another lav against being not straight. Against a man being together with a man and a woman being together with a woman. A man should not pretend to be a woman in order to be together with a man. And a woman should not pretend to be a man in order to be together with a woman. Whether you want to apply this to YU or not, that's something that you can use on your own. It's perfectly fine. Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Go ahead and figure it out on your own. But regardless, the Yalkut Reuveni says, it refers to people that aren't straight. They're missing out on something. I feel bad for them. I feel horrible for them that they feel that their lives are incomplete without doing this type of a thing. I feel horrible for them. I feel absolutely horrible, and my heart goes out to them that they feel that they have to do this, that their taivas are only for people of the same gender. I feel horrible. Does that mean it's mutter? No. It's 100% usur. It's a taiva. And that's what it means. Don't pretend to be something you're not. That's it. And now you can understand the Balaturim. Kli gever. You said you were a gematria junkie. Ready? Kli gever al isha. It's a gematria 671. Same gematria as clay Torah. Gever Alisha is the same gematria as Torah, clay Torah. The idea is like this. Their kochos are not to learn Torah Sheval Peh. Their kochos were not made to learn Gemara. What do you want to say? Because they make it into tiflus. Chazal say it's called tiflus. There's lots of questions what that means. They make it into frivolity. The Rambam quotes that Gemara 100% is in Chafal from a Beis and Sota. That whether it means frivolousness, that they make fun of it, whether they're always looking for the maskana, they don't care about the process, whether they go ahead and they try to, they're more heter to themselves. Everybody has their own pshat on what this means of tiflus. But the pshat is, they weren't made for it. What were they made for? Find out. Halachas, Tanakh, whatever it is. They were not made with the mind to be able to go through these things and delve into them the way a man's mind was made. Were mechuyev to go into Torah Sheval Peh? They are not mechuyev. Can they learn Torah Sheval Peh? Can they learn Gemara? I have nothing against. I'm not going to go up to them and slap them. Well, I can't because of Negiya. Well, no, for them, they might be men. I don't know. Regardless, I'm not going to do anything to them if I see them learning Gemara. But the fact is, should they learn Gemara? If somebody comes up to me, should I learn Gemara? Why? What's the point of it? What are you going to gain out of it? If a Kaddish Baruch Hu did couldn't tell you V'agisa bo yomam v'layla to you. It did not apply to you. If that pasuk of learning all day and all night doesn't, then why do it? I'm sorry.
They want to go up and beyond.
Up and beyond, and that's part of the problem. That is that in the best interest of HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
Let's say they're not doing their part. They're doing their part and more.
Oh, that's a different story. If they already finished everything, if they already finished everything, that's a different story. If they've learned Tanakh and they know Halachos and they know everything they're supposed to know, then if they want to learn the Svara process of Gemara and take the LSATs and do well on them, that's perfectly fine. We're not going to stop a woman from taking the LSATs. But the fact is that what they're supposed to do? Is that something that should be a goal for them? That my goal should be that eventually I learn Gemara. It shouldn't even be a goal. Why should it be a goal? Know who you are and know what you're doing. Know what you're doing. That's the idea behind it. Okay, that's the Yonah Tunizio. Ready. Shiluach HaKain, absolute power. The fact that you go ahead and find the mother bird and you throw away the mother bird and you take the egg, an absolute power. Absolute does not make any sense how we go ahead and do this. So here we go. The Chassam Sofer says, the Ramban, the Ramban says, the lesson behind Shiluach HaKain is that you're not allowed to be cruel. Why you're not allowed to be cruel? Because when you take the child away, you got to send away the mother bird. Don't let the mother bird see you take the child. Says the Chassam Sofer in Tshuvas Or HaChaim, Simen Kuf, that according to that reasoning, if you don't need the baby bird, it's usur to do Shiluach HaKain. Also, if you don't need it, don't do it. Don't do it in the first place. Because the whole Siba, the whole time behind the mitzvah, is to not be cruel. So you're going to go ahead and be cruel? You're going to send away the mother? Says the Chassam Sofer, I don't understand. The whole Siba is saying, if you don't need it, you shouldn't do it. But the fact is, some Rishonim Paskin, and this is how we hold, that even if you don't need the baby bird, you go ahead and do Shiluach HaKain. What a pella! If the whole mitzvah is there to teach you not to be cruel, you're being cruel. What we do is we're cruel, and you just keep it. You're not going to use it. You just keep it. If you put it back, the baby's not. The mother's not coming back. Mother doesn't come back for that baby. It doesn't make a difference. If you pick it up, it's done. It's done with it. But it's such a pella that we go in and do this, even though it's cruel. Says the Chassam Sofer. So why do we do it? Listen to this. The Arizal, the Yalkut Ruveini, they bring it down from all over the place. They say from the following, then the Zohar as well. When the bird cries out, the Sar, the angel in charge of the birds, hears it and brings its complaint to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem, you took away a baby from this mother bird. Please give it another baby. When Hashem hears it, it's an Ace Rachamim. When the Sar of the birds goes up and asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu for mercy for that bird, it's an Ace Rachamim. And at that time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks the Jew did a mitzvah. And he goes ahead and he gives you rachamim at the exact same moment. Because the bird cries out and causes rachamim in Shemayim, that rachamim gets applied back down to us. And we get that rachamim back down to us. So there's a mekubal dika reason why we do it. That's what the Chassam Sofer says. Therefore you should do it anytime, any place, even if you don't need the egg, you should go ahead and do it. The Rebbe Yehuda argues and everything. Yes, it only applies by kosher birds, only by certain types of birds. You have to see it only by the mother and everything. That's like that. However, I will tell you, there's a shot that I have on it. I don't know if it's great, but I saw Panach Raza. It's also Kiyikra. It has to be something that you meet up with. Panach Raza says, the pasuk says, Baharachta Yamin. It says, if you do this, Shaleach Tishlach is an aim, that's a Banim Tikach Loch, Manitav Lecha, so that it's good for you, Baharachta Yamin. And you'll have length of days. You'll live a long life, right? The Panach Raza says, now you'll have a long life. And you'll give the bird long life. You'll give the mother bird long life. And what's the shot behind that Panach Raza? You're going to take away its baby and all of a sudden the mother's going to have a long life? You ready for this? This is a good shot. This is a very good shot. I thought of this for last year and I think it fits beautifully into the Panach Raza. The idea is, why were you able to take that egg or that chick? Because the bird made the nest in a dumb place. In a place that very easily the babies could be taken by something else. What you're doing is you're showing the mother bird sacrifices sometimes have to be made for you to realize that you got to be more careful with your things. If I yell at a kid who's about to run into a street, so if I yell at him, does a person come up to me and say, oh, you're such a cruel person. How can you yell at your child? Of course not. It's rachamim. It's mercy on the child. But you got to do it in a way that the child understands. You got to know this. From now on, never walk inside that street. You got to make sure that's there. It's the exact same thing by the mother bird. You got to tell this mother bird, you're wrong. Don't put your eggs here. It's a stupid place to put your eggs. And if you don't understand that, then the rest of your life you're going to be eaten. You're going to live a very, very short life. You're not going to be able to live. So the pshat is, you're doing it for mercy, even if the babies are not for you. You're doing it to lengthen the bird's life. You can't be guaranteed those chicks will really live. You can't be guaranteed the egg will really hatch. But you can't be guaranteed that that mother bird is going to live longer. Now, varakta yom does apply to the mother bird, and you're making it live for longer. That's perhaps part of a siba as to why shiluach hakein could be a form of rachamim and everything. We got one last board over here. So let's go like this. So here we go. Moav. So how does this go exactly? So I heard this actually from Rabbi Zinnis, I think it was 3 years ago. Rabbi Zinnis said this board over. It was a story, and I like the mashal a lot. Moav is a very, very strange story. It's Chav Gimel Dalet. I'll just read you guys out the psukim. It says, Lo yavo ammoni and moavi b'kal Hashem. Ammonis and moavis are not allowed to come to the Jews. Gam dor asiri lo yavo b'kal Hashem ad olam. Even the 10th generation. They can never join the Jewish people. Moav and Ammon are never going to be Jewish. They can never become a ger. Why? Because they didn't give you bread and water, but Derech Petzeis Mitzrayim when he came out of Mitzrayim. And because Bilam ben Beor was hired by them to curse you out. Oh, wait a second. Bilam never cursed us. And because they didn't give us bread and water? Wait a second. Bread and water. Why would they give that to us for free? They didn't have the money for that. Who has the money to bring bread and water to all these other nations whenever they're passing by your land? They're going to do Achnas Torkum to 3.6 million people? I mean, that's a good excuse. We couldn't do it because we didn't have the money. So what are they talking about? So listen to this mashal. It's Rabbi Zinnis, that unbelievable mashal. It's really good mashal. It's from the Dubno Magid. Dubno Magid said the idea is like this. There was a guy who wanted a Talmud Chacham for a son-in-law. Really wanted a Talmud Chacham for a son-in-law. So he went to the Rosh Yeshiva and he told the Rosh Yeshiva, listen, I want somebody who's really good. So he said to the guy, are you going to support him? So the guy said, yeah, I'll support him. I'll let him learn for the rest of his life. So Rosh Yeshiva finds a nice guy. The nice guy marries the daughter. Okay, everything's all good. The next morning he wakes up and he's about to go learn. And the father-in-law brings him this wormy, moldy bread. So the guy, out of niceties, I guess you can say, took a little piece of the bread, swallowed it. He couldn't eat it. It was disgusting. Absolutely wormy. So he figured, okay, it was just one time. It's not that big of a deal. Goes back to his father-in-law the next day after the wormy bread is served to him again. And he says to him, Abba, I can't eat this stuff. There's no way I can eat this stuff. This stuff is disgusting. Father-in-law said to him, listen, you're going to eat it and you're going to like it. You're going to eat it and you're going to like it. So the guy said, I just can't eat it. I can't do it. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. He said, oh yeah? He hired two huge goons, to go make sure that every single morning when this guy got up and every single night he would eat the moldy bread. So after that happened the first time, these goons are like forcing it down his throat. He runs back to the Rosh Hashiva. He says to the Rosh Hashiva, this is ridiculous. The Rosh Hashiva calls in the father-in-law. He says, what happened? What in the world is going on? You're feeding him this moldy bread? What's going on with you? His father-in-law says, Rebbe, you don't understand. I can't afford anything else. All I can afford is this moldy bread, the old bread from the shuk. That's all I can do. What can I do? I don't have any money. Says the Rosh Hashiva, you have enough money to hire goons, but you don't have enough money to get them regular bread? What's wrong with you? Here's the pshat. If Moab wants to claim that they couldn't give us bread and water because they couldn't afford it, then how did they have the money to go hire Bilam? They went there and hired Bilam, right? Do you know how much Bilam costs? Bilam was an unbelievable... An unbelievable person who cost a ton of money. If you had enough money to go pay for Bilam, you had enough money to be able to give them food and water. So if you claim you didn't have enough money, then you shouldn't have had enough money in order to hire Bilam. So Mineyube, you guys are gone. You guys are gone. You're cruel to the extreme. And he knocked them out completely. That's the story behind them. There's a little bit more to it with Rav Wolfson. If you want to look it up, Rav Wolfson has a piece on Emunas Yitachah about what chesed means. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.